Welcome to the Productivity Mastery Podcast, presented to you by myself, Stoyan Yankov, productivity and performance coach, keynote and TEDx speaker, and co-author of the Perform Methodology, and the book Perform, the Unsexy Truth About Startup Success. Join me on a journey to discover what some of the world's leading professionals do to be more productive, create peak performing teams, and build successful global companies. New episodes weekly. And now, enjoy today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Productivity Mastery. Or this is a new format this time around because, as you can see, we are starting work on a new book. And the book is going to be about leadership in times of a crisis. Plenty of crises in the last couple of years, and experts are talking about the upcoming global recession. In any case, it's always good to have the right tools. And where do we find the right tools to deal with crisis? Well, by asking the right people, people with a lot of experience, senior leaders. And I couldn't be happier to welcome our first guest in this in his new format, Howard Bihar, the founding president of Starbucks International, somebody with close to 50 years of experience in the business world. And I'm sure he's gone through plenty of crises. Howard, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great, Joanne. How about you?
Fantastic. Thank you. And I just want to go to the point from the get-go. When I say crisis and you think about Starbucks, your life at Starbucks, what's the first story and example that comes to mind as a major crisis that you were faced with?
When I made a significant mistake in a number on a projection for a strategic plan, and it came back to bite me, and I had to figure out how to fix it. So that was I was there 3 months and I blew it, and I had to fix it. In the scheme of things, it wasn't such a huge crisis as I look back at it. But at the time, I thought it was huge.
And Howard, by the way, those of you who are tuning in and listening, Howard is also the author of a book called It's Not About the Coffee. I highly recommend this book with a lot of practical lessons on how to apply servant leadership. And that's something I'm really excited to explore with you. How do we apply servant leadership when we are faced with challenges, with difficult times in the business?
Well, it's the same way you do it all the time. Consistency pays. And being who you are and being an authentic leader, being a vulnerable leader, understanding that that there are no stressful situations, only stressful responses, servant leadership is applicable during all phases of business life. And so when you have a crisis, you have to remember who you are, where you came from, and act accordingly. Because many times when a crisis happens, people revert back to a mode of authoritarianism, right? They want to make all the decisions. They want to be the ones doing everything. And that's really the time when you want to depend on your people, because nobody knows more about what's going on in the business than your team.
So what I'm hearing is it's not the times of crisis, the right time to start investing in our people. You know, it's not the crisis kids right now. Let's go and let's put culture and people first. This is a decision that needs to be made a lot before.
Yeah, it's all the time. So people can depend. I mean, if there's a fire going on in the building, then, you know, that's a crisis. You want to get everybody out. Then it's not time for discussion. It's time for getting everybody out. But most of the things we deal with aren't that. And we need to be able to be consistent in how we lead and how we manage, so people know what to expect from us.
And Howard, I've been reading your book, really, really inspiring book. And there was this example you gave. I think it was 1997, which was a tragic accident in Starbucks. Yeah. And I wonder if you can share a little bit about that. And obviously, everybody's a human and everybody's faced with different type of crisis. But I just wanted to hear from you If you can go back in time and just give us a bit of a perspective around this accident, and actually how did you and Howard Schultz responded in such a situation?
Yeah, what happened was I got a call about 3 o'clock in the morning, my time on the West Coast of the United States, from our regional vice president who was in Washington, D.C. And, you know, I was asleep and I woke up and he said to me, we've had a disaster. So I'm thinking, you know, we've had a fire, we've had whatever. It turned out it was a big disaster. Somebody had come in and held up one of our stores and killed all three people in the store. And so we, you know, that's a crisis. So I immediately got on the phone with Howard Schultz, who happened to be on the East Coast at the time. I said, Howard, you got to get there right away. And he got to from New York to Washington, D.C. quickly. And you know, he basically stepped right in and did the things he needed to do. You know, all the television cameras were there. And instead of Howard, you know, trying to, you know, not say anything, but say, well, let me get my, you know, thinking about it, he better get his attorneys involved before he says anything. He just stood up and he said, I don't know what's happened, but as soon as we know what's happened, we'll tell you. And so we had just an honest response. Here's what happened. When we found out, here's what happened. And Howard, he went and visited all the families of the three young people that were killed in this horrendous event. And we actually ended up closing that store down and for a long time. And then when we opened it back up, we dedicated all the profits to nonviolence in Washington, D.C. So it was first telling the truth, not trying to hide, not saying, hey, it wasn't my fault, but rather taking ownership of the situation, realizing that, you know, who knows, you may get sued, you may not, who knows what's going to happen. Then doing the right thing by the people, making sure that the families were taken care of first, and making sure all the other people that worked in the store were taken care of. We hired counselors and we paid them while they couldn't work, and we did the right thing. And, you know, it was that kind of crisis. You just have to be authentic, vulnerable human being and understand that people are in pain and deal with that in an honest way.
Is that the recipe for response in any kind of situation and crisis?
Always honesty. If you don't know the answer, say, I don't know the answer, but I'll get back to you right away. And then get the answer and do get back. And, you know, do the right thing by your people. Always look at it. What's the effect on the people involved? What was the effect on the people that worked in the store? I mean, the people that were these co-workers, I mean, they were brokenhearted. I mean, it was difficult. The families, one of the people that was killed was a 17-year-old. It was his first week on the job, first job ever. And it was, you know, it was not a pleasant situation, but you know, Howard handled it in the right way, and that's the way you got to do it. Only the truth sounds like the truth is what I like to say.
Did you have situations in which you had doubts and you had no idea what was the right thing to do? And how did you act in those situations?
Yeah, well, those words, only the truth sounds like the truth, came up, I had just become president of a company in the Seattle area, and I'm on the job 3 months, and I realized we had to go through some layoffs because we were losing money. And my team and I created a plan with a layoff list, and the layoff list got left on a Friday evening, got left on the copier. And so I go home, and all of a sudden, phone was ringing off the hook, you know. Somebody had found it and started circulating it all. And I called an emergency meeting for the next morning with my team and went around the room and said, what should we do? And, you know, half the room said, well, just deny it. Just say it's just something we're thinking about, but it's not probably not really going to happen. And then my administrative assistant, a woman named Lori Christmas, she just looked at me, poked me on the shoulder and said, Howard, only the truth sounds like the truth. And she was right. And so that next Monday morning, I got the whole team together. I told them everything that had happened and what they could expect from us during the week. And one person got up and said, thank you for telling us the truth. I'll do everything I can to support you. And then the whole room got up and did the same thing. And so you learn a valuable lesson as a fairly young president of a company that, you know, trust your people with the truth. And even if it costs you your job, you know, even if you're going to go through some pain yourself, you're better off to do that than lie to your people.
Doing the right thing is always the right thing, they like to say. And what I like about your philosophy and the way you explain it is also sometimes it's really hard to know what to do. But if you go back and look within and if you connect with your values,
right,
you probably have the answers. You probably have the direction. Can you maybe talk about that, the importance of having a strong culture and strongly defined values in terms of responding to a crisis in a good way?
Well, number one, you have to have those as an individual. You have to know who you are, what your values are, how you want to live those values. Because as a leader, those things are going to show up in the workplace. And people have to know what to expect from you and know how you'll react in stressful times. And so then the organization, you know, needs to reflect its values. But their organizations are always reflective of the leader's values in some way, form, or another. Doesn't mean the organization's values are exactly the same as the leader's, but they pretty much have to align, right? And people that come in have to align and take on those values. Like, we're always honest with each other. We treat each other with respect and dignity. You know, we care deeply about each other, even when it costs us. You know, those things matter, and then how you act on those things matter. And so, culture is bandied about a lot today, but every organization has a culture. The question you have to ask yourself, is this the culture you want? And then if it's the one you want, then you got to live by it. And even when it costs you, you got to live by it. That's the key to it. Everybody, talk is cheap. You find out what you're made of when a crisis happens, and you have to respond.
And let's now imagine that there is a young entrepreneur listening to this podcast and they get faced with some sort of a challenge, a crisis, maybe a global recession is affecting their industry. Something hits them. What would you be your advice in terms of what would be the first steps? Is there any specific areas that they should focus on, prioritize? What would be the first steps when a crisis hits?
Is good communication. Don't leave your people out in the rain. Make sure that they know what's going on, that you've given them an umbrella. That doesn't mean you tell them everything's going to be okay. Sometimes it's not. So you have to tell them the truth. The goal is not to scare the hell out of them. The goal is to give them the data and the information so that they can make better decisions themselves. And then be honest with what's going on and what you're thinking about. And if you're going to have layoffs, tell them we might have some layoffs, but here's what you can depend that in the next 2 weeks, we'll have all the information we need and I'll keep you informed along the way. But that's really the key, being authentic, being honest, not lying, and then asking for their help. Asking what they think you should do. Leaders don't have to have all the answers. You know, depend on your people to help you out. They'll help you out and they'll figure it out with you. And I think that's key is letting them know that you will be honest with them and then being honest with them.
The last time you were a guest at the podcast, you shared a story which wasn't really a story of such a major crisis, but I found it very important in that sense. You came back to the company, as I remember, and you found a culture that was more of a me culture in Starbucks as opposed to put people first, we culture, and you did something really interesting. You set everybody on a big goal, big milestone, in order to bring people together. Maybe can you tell us what was the philosophy behind that? What was the intuition to do this?
Well, I always found that the way people bring together is give them a goal that they have to accomplish together and that they can't do it on their own. And the only way they can get it done is if they work together. And so that's what I did. I just made up this goal. I said, we need to increase average unit volume by 100,000 in 3 years. Well, I didn't know if we could do that or not, but it didn't make any difference. If we did, we got 50,000, it would be great. And then I said, we're going to get back together in 3 weeks, and I want each of you to come back with a plan after you've discussed it with your coworkers on what you're going to contribute to that goal. And that started the process. And it ended up that they actually surpassed the goal, and they did 150,000 instead of 100,000 in 3 years. But, you know, some people got mad. They said, well, you're pitting us against each other. I said, no, I'm not. I said, you know, the people that that can commit to the biggest increase or achieving their goals, and they got to get the resources. And I think all of you would agree with that, right? Because we're all going to participate in the success or the failure. If we miss it, then we all have to deal with that. If we go past it, then we can all celebrate our success. And so, you know, they came together and made it happen.
Back in the 60s, President Kennedy had this famous speech, I think, where he was talking about the Chinese word for crisis, which is compiled of these two words, danger and opportunity.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know if that's true, but I think it's a great metaphor for where a crisis is. And you just share one opportunity in what you found. I wonder, do you have any kind of a process when crisis happens, or you see that there's crisis down the road? Have you had any process or strategy of, hey, we need to sit down and we need to evaluate and assess the risks and try to address them, potentially anticipate what's coming, but also we need to look into opportunities? Like, did you have any strategy and process with the other executives?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the primary thing is open communication. Is not trying to do it with your office door closed. And you get your people together and you lay out the problem, you lay out the issue as you know it, and you get feedback from them. What do they think? Sometimes what you think is a crisis turns out not to be. Just like you said, it turns out to be an opportunity. And if we act, you know, we can take advantage of that opportunity. Other times there is something really going on that we've got to fix quickly. And like, you know, the thing that happened in Washington, D.C., you got to get on it right away. And so, but I think the key is open, honest communication and laying out, when you do that, you know, laying out the steps, where you are, what we see, what we're experiencing, how each of us think we could deal with it or fix it or make the problem go away, and then create the steps of doing that. Each person with their own specific responsibility and a timeline to do it. And then always, if it's a crisis, then maybe a crisis that you're meeting, you know, six times in a day. You're coming, you're going, you're meeting, then you're taking action, you're coming back, meet again, what happened? And then you're doing it again. Sometimes it's, you know, once a week. Depends on what it is and how long you're going to be dealing with it and, you know, what kind of crisis it is. And so, but it's, I think the key to dealing with any crisis is communication. What the problem is, ask what they think. I mean, you know, you see it in government all the time. The ones that screw up are the ones that lie. You know, they either deny that there's a crisis, right? Or they make up a crisis. You see it in your part of the world right now, right? Make up a crisis, right? And now he's not only made up a crisis, now we've got a real problem, right?
We actually have a question from Billy, yeah, which is connected to communication. I think it's actually quite an interesting question. Thank you, Billy, for tuning in. And the question is, how do you deal with the internal and external communications in moment like this, especially with the press? You know, we already covered the internal communication, but externally with the press, what would be your advice?
Well, only the truth sounds like the truth. I mean, I think one of the greatest things that Howard Schultz did when we had that hold up with the kids that got killed was that he got in front of the camera without hiding. You know, most CEOs say the first person they call are their attorneys, and then they call their public relations agency. You can't do that. I mean, you have to be prepared for stuff like this. You don't just, you know, and like I said, you tell the truth, always tell the truth. If you don't know, you say, I don't know. And even when you get pressed, you say, you know, I would love to give you that answer, but I don't know it. But I promise you, I'll get back to you as soon as I know the answer. And, some things you can't, you know, it depends. Let's say that you're missing a quarter and you're a public company and you're going to miss the numbers in a quarter. And, you know, you got to get that information out. You know, you can't just hold it back. You got to tell people that this is what's happening and, you know, this is what you're going to do to fix it. You know, you can't lie. It always comes back to bite you. And so, the press, you can guide, you know, you can guide and you can talk about what you're trying to do, but you always have to tell the truth because you'll get found out.
It sounds so simple, right? Tell the truth, be upfront. Yet it's so difficult sometimes for people to live it.
Yeah, it is. It's for leaders. It's difficult for people to live it. I mean, you know, how many leaders do we know, particularly in the political arena, lie all the time? You know, they don't tell the truth because they don't want the pain that's going to go with telling the truth.
Or hide it. Or hide it.
Try to hide it. Yeah. I mean, how does that work in the long term? Is that really what you want to have happen? You know, I mean, it's like crazy making.
You know, what I think it's also good to cover is, especially in this region, and I know that your roots are also from the region, your dad and your granddad are from Bulgaria, but Balkans and Eastern Europe are a special place. And I think one of the things that I discover being from the region is also we don't like to appear weak. You know, many leaders don't like to admit their mistakes because of the culture. It's kind of perceived if I share my failures, my mistakes, people might think I'm a weak leader. Yeah. Maybe if you can share a little bit about the role of vulnerability in terms of being a leader.
Yeah. I mean, I've never led a country, so I don't know all the issues of people that have to lead countries, and they deal with a lot more than a specific situation. But in a business, right, where you're serving customers, you're serving your people, the people that work in your organization, you know, I think the only way to deal with it is through honesty and to not hide and to not lie about things, and because you're going to get found out. And what happens is when you do that, you break trust. And the only thing that keeps the world going round and round or keeps organizations together is trust. It's the same thing in a family. If you're married and you have children, if you don't have trust with each other, then you don't have a family. It's the same thing in a business, and it's the same thing in a country. And trust is broken down. And a lot of leaders intentionally want to break trust because they want to become the leader. So they do things to break trust between the people and the government in hopes that they're going to be the next one to be in charge. You see it all the time, right? That's what they do, right? Look at in the United States. I mean, we got Trump. His whole goal was to break trust between the press and the people. So he comes up with this saying, fake news, right? So what was he trying to do? That's what he was trying to do. And it succeeded with a lot of people. Doesn't mean that the press sometimes isn't wrong or screw up or whatever it is. It's true, they do, but we should hold them accountable at that time. But can you imagine a leader in a company that start talking behind the back of some of the people that report to them, how that would work? All of a sudden trust would be broken. Now you don't have anybody that likes you or cares about you or will do anything for you. And you destroy the organization.
And one of the things that you also, I have a lot of notes from the book and from materials that you've shared. One of the things that you remind us in the book is good times can lead to your greatest challenges.
Yeah. Well, because you get caught up and you're thinking that you're fantastic and that nothing can go wrong and you're a hero. And I find that it's best to moderate those things. Celebrate your successes, but don't over celebrate. Celebrate the things with your people and make sure they know how much you appreciate them, but don't go beyond, you know, because sometimes you know, your ego starts to get in the way and you think you can't make any mistakes. And that's when you're going to make a big one.
Do you believe we're in such a situation, you know, globally these days? Yeah. Like,
yeah, we are right now. There is a great book written by one of the founders of Intel called Andy Grove, one of the CEOs, Only the Paranoid Survive, you know? And I kind of subscribe to that, you know? Always a little bit. I have this voice that sits on my shoulder to tell me, Howard, you're not that good. You know, don't get caught up in your own BS, you know?
Because as much as you think everything is going perfectly well, something's going to happen. Something's going to come out of somewhere.
Yeah, happen. And not that you always should expect bad to happen. You just need to be prepared. You know,
one thing I'm curious to learn from you is, and obviously every organization have objectives, goals, KPIs, and so on. When major crisis hits, did you guys have to adapt the way you plan? Maybe kind of use shorter periods because there's a lot of uncertainty. Like, do you have to adapt the planning?
Adapt to the situation, to what's going on. If all of a sudden, let's say you miss your numbers, well, all right, what's going on? What do you got to do to fix it? Yeah, and then now all of a sudden, what you thought was a plan is no longer a plan because you're missing it. And so you got to get in and you got to look at where you are and what's going on, then revise. You can't just keep saying it's the plan, you know? And meanwhile, all your tanks are getting blown up, right? But this was our plan. So, you know, execute the plan. All your people getting killed. Execute the plan. No, you adjust your plan, you know, to what's going on.
Does that mean more frequent meetings with the other leaders?
Yeah, more open, more frequent meetings, more conversation. Not to get frozen, you know, but you're halfway up the hill and you realize somebody's blocking you that you didn't expect to be there. All right, what are you going to do to get around them or through them? What do you have to adjust? I mean, military leaders have to face this all the time, right? It never goes like they expect. And businesses are no different. Never really goes like you expect, right? It never. It's either more or less.
And would you recommend that we as business leaders pay even more attention to our people and I mean, put more time and energy to listen to our people, to be there for them, unrelated to the business objectives and so on. Yeah. Just.
Yeah, absolutely. And you see it working all the time. You see it where organizations, where the leaders, you know, are with their people. They're not giving their people impossible tasks, but they're working with their people. They're communicating with their people. They're letting them know what's going on, how it's going, what things we need to fix or change, and never holding anything back.
And to turn things on the kind of the positive side or like the opportunities, I really like what you say. Once again, I'm coming back to the book. Guys, you gotta get a copy of this book. I reread this book. This is my culture Bible. It's called It's Not About the Coffee by Howard Bihar. Go check it out. Get a copy. But one of the things that you remind us about is when there is a challenging situation, there's a crisis, get a bite of success. Which I think is fascinating because when there's a trouble, your body, your mind shuts down. You fully focus on problems. It's so much stress. And when I read that, it was like, that's so true. Not just for us, but to remind our people that, hey, there's a little progress. There's a little celebration. Not everything is bad, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then celebrate that little success. And that little success turns into a little bigger success. And that's how things go. If you know, what do they say? How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. you know, and that's the key to it, is taking one bite at a time and keep moving forward. And you can always find something right in the organization, even when everything looks dark. And look for that one thing and then celebrate in a small way that one thing, that thing that's right. And then all of a sudden people start to say, oh, okay, we can.
Hey, especially the leaders, the founders who are listening, the entrepreneurs out there, the managers, executives, it is part of our job to remind people to put the attention on, hey, you know, we had a meeting with a client. Amazing. Okay, we didn't land the deal yet, but hey, stuff is happening. Let's point our attention of what's we're gonna get out of it, or at least give some light at the end of the tunnel.
Exactly.
Yeah, fantastic. So you mentioned, you talk about a little bit about the big challenge, which was about you had to lay off people.
Yeah.
I wonder how do you deal with that from a mental standpoint? I mean, probably not the most pleasant thing to do when you're faced with such a situation, especially knowing you love people so much. Do you have any practices to get centered or get calm when something, you receive an email with something like that or something major happens? How do you find the strength and courage in times of a crisis?
You know, you have to focus on what you're trying to do. What's the greater purpose of the organization? And that has to, you have to attach to that. Make sure that you're still clear about that. What are we trying to do here? We're trying to build this organization, and we have, all of a sudden business goes bad and we have to have layoffs. And you know, my values still are my values, right? First, my first core value is honesty. You know, I have to treat everybody with respect and dignity. You know, I care like I mean it. That means that sometimes caring has a price tag to it. I love my people, right? I don't mean love like in the sense of you love your children, but you love your people because they're human beings, they're worthy of love. And so your values have to be your values, in even more so in times of crisis. I'll share with you here. I've got, let's see, where is it? He has it here someplace. Oops. Sorry. Well, basically what it is it's Howard in 50 words or less. And it has my mission statement on it. It has my values and it has my 6 P's. And those things drive my life, whether it's in time of crisis or whether it's time of celebration. You know, you don't, it keeps you centered into who you are. You know, it's, I find that the biggest issue is when leaders in times of crisis, they become different human beings. Their values change. All of a sudden, you know, they're afraid themselves, so they start blaming. They point the finger outward. Who did that? Who did that? Who made that mistake? You know, and all of a sudden that tears at the hem of the organization. And when you can't do that, you need to be consistent in how you lead. That doesn't mean that when you're in a crisis mode that, you know, maybe your energy level's got to go up. You know, that if it's a fire, you know, you grab everybody and say, get out of here, get out of the door. There's fire here, get out. We'll talk about it later, right? But most things are not like that. Most things are, you know, you get your team together. We have a problem. What do you think? Here's what we're saying. Here's the information that I have. Does anybody have any more information? Da, 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 da. And now what are the things that we can do to fix it? And how fast do we need to fix it? Is this the building is on fire or is this I miss a number? You know, it's you have to be rational about the situation. Some leaders, when they miss a number, it's like the building is on fire. Well, the building is not on fire just because you miss a quarter. You missed a quarter and you don't like it and you don't want to, you hate having to report to your shareholders that you missed a quarter and your stock's going to go down, but it's not, the building isn't burning.
And in many ways, there's not much you can do right now. No. I mean, it's a quarter now. Okay, why putting more into the fire? There's no need to
look at the hurricane in Florida. All the businesses, it all basically, the buildings got blown down. Well, you know, they can moan and groan and they can do all that stuff, and it's a crisis, but they just have to deal with it in a productive way. There's, you know, and you can be sad. Look at the people that lose their houses, lose everything. You know, how they respond to that determines everything that's going to happen in the future. And you see all sorts of different responses, and that's because that's the way it is. If somebody in the family got killed in it, that people have to respond to that, you know. And how do they respond to it? How are they going to get their lives back together? You know, and the ones that freeze, you know, or get angry, start blaming others, are the ones that are going to struggle. The ones that cry, that or feel their emotion, but say, I got to move forward. Where am I? What do I have to do? It's that old saying, think like a person of action, act like a person of thought.
There was a book by, I think, Robert McKee, a screenwriter. Yeah. And the book is called Story, I believe.
Yeah.
And in the book, he talks about how do we build stories and design characters. And he says in the book, I remember this part, true character gets revealed in times of stress, in times of a challenge.
Yeah.
That's where, you know, in good times, everybody can be a good leader.
Everybody can good, but that's right. That's when the character is being built. I have a family member that went into a mental crisis, and I knew he was in trouble. We were talking on the phone and I could tell. And so I immediately called the crisis hotline for people that might commit suicide. And I asked for help. I said, what do we need to do? And what's your advice? And so I got some advice, and then we followed through. We got my family member into a hot mental hospital and settled. That's the first thing we need to do. We needed to deal with that situation, right? You know, I could have just said, I'm overwhelmed. I can't deal with this. You got to find somebody else, you know, but you can't do that. You take the action that you need to take in that time. It was a fire. I needed to put out the fire. Now then I could take the next step. I got the guy, got him into the hospital. Now what? He's coming out of the hospital, right? What do I do with him? I had to figure out what I was going to do. So I made a decision. He had to come live with me for a while. It wasn't fun, right? Because he was truly in crisis. I mean, I was dealing with a mentally ill person at that time. And, you know, and did I get frustrated a little bit sometimes? Yeah, but I had to deal with where he was, not where I was. And then I had to develop a plan for how are we going to deal with this? How I'm going to help him out of this? Well, I started calling around to mental institutions and hospitals all around the country. And I would explain the situation and ask for what they thought. And all of a sudden, one time, and I call this one hospital in Boston, and I get a hold of this one woman, and she said, here's what it sounds like to me, and here's somebody you might want to talk to. And I got with that person on the phone and laid out the situation then, and he said, and we developed a plan of action. This guy didn't know me from Adam, but because I asked, he was a kind human being, and I had to agree to pay him some money, but it was okay. You know, we needed to take the action. And all of a sudden, we started to make progress. And over time, now I look back at that situation. It was 2 years ago. And the guy's, is he perfectly healthy? No. But he's productive. He's back at it again. And, you know, out of the crisis. But you had to take you had to deal with the fire. I had to put the fire out as quickly as I could. I wasn't going to solve the whole problem right then and there. And then I had to develop, then I had to care like I really meant it. That meant that I had to take care of that person, even though it was uncomfortable for me. I had to do that. Cost me time, cost me money, cost me emotions, you know, in my house, all those things. And then had to develop, and then I had to develop a plan of action along with the person. And I had to talk with this person. I said, here's what I see in you. You know, how are you doing here? And we had to do it day by day. Sometimes it was minute by minute. He couldn't even go outside for a walk. And I said, you know, let's just walk outside. Let's take 10 steps in the driveway. Matter of fact, I have a pole for you to hang on to. And that's how we started it. We took 10 steps and then we took 20 steps. And then we got up to where we're walking 6 blocks, you know? And then at the very end, he went and walked by me, but it was that kind of thing. We took little steps, put out the fire first and took little steps and solved the problem.
This is such a great metaphor for all of us. Like when fire hits, put on the first step, right? Like it might take days or weeks or years even to recover.
Yeah.
But if you are doing something productively, because often you don't know what you should be doing.
Yeah, right.
And
ask for help.
Final question, Howard. Again, I just want to finish on the positive, and I know there's many entrepreneurs, founders listening who might be afraid of the upcoming recession, the global events. You know, there's so much uncertainty out in the world these days. And could you maybe share, if you can think of, what are the opportunities out there? Like, I'm sure you've gone through many different periods with Starbucks, market periods, crisis, and so on. Like, what are the opportunities in terms of, if we show up as leaders, what's the good on the other side? If we come together, if we focus on our people, if we show leadership with our actions, have you had a situation where you went on the other side and you actually came out much stronger?
Oh, sure, absolutely. You know, during this downturn at Starbucks, 2007, 2008, all of a sudden sales are going like this. You know, and we're having to figure out what we needed to do. Now we had to go through some layoffs then, and we made some mistakes along the way. But by 2010, we were back at it. Now we were prepared, though. You know, we had been conservative with our resources. We had had money in the bank, right? We weren't always expecting only the good going to come. So we had a backup. You know, what I call insurance, so to speak, to help us get through it. If we would have had massive amounts of debt, you know, it might have been a different story. But because we didn't always expect the worst, but we planned for the best and also planned for what could happen if it was the worst, so that we had access to capital when we needed it. You know, that's the deal, right? You can't just think things are going to go great. So you have access. And we came out the other side of it because we had prepared for the worst. We were ready to come out the other side. And when everybody else was struggling, we had resources and money to put our foot on the accelerator. It's like right now, I have a friend he's a contractor and he builds houses in the Seattle area. And he went through that recession and he almost went broke, but he paid everybody off. And he said, I'm never going to go through that again. So he gets back in the housing construction business. And instead of always being on the edge, always borrowing, always building more houses than maybe he was with his ability, he pulled back a little bit. He changed the model of his business. He went, instead of building low-end houses, started to build custom houses. And he changed his business model. So he gets back again and he gets after it again. And now what he's doing, because he's worried about the downturn again, but he's got money in the bank this time. He wasn't going to go through that again. And he's doing great. He's doing fantastic.
There was a quote by a guy called Jason Calacanis: fortunes are built in the down market and collected in the up market.
Yeah, right. That's right. Fortunes are built in the down market and collected in the up market. That's just the way it is, you know?
Fabulous. Howard, is there anything else you'd like to share on the topic of leadership, servant leadership in times of a crisis, before we wrap up the episode?
Well, we're all going to deal with a crisis sometimes in our lives, right? It could be personal. It could be in our business world. Who knows what it's going to be? And if we figure out how to do it before it happens, what we're going to do instead of reacting, right? But acting according to our crisis plans. I mean, Starbucks, after that thing happened in Washington, D.C., we said we can never be surprised by this again or let this happen again. So we developed a crisis team. Here's what we do. Here are the steps we take. And here's who does what, right? And so the next time something happened, we were ready.
Howard, thank you once again for joining. Thank you for being a leader who cares, for being a giver. And you're such an inspiration in that perspective. You've been such a giver. I'll be in debt for everything that you
do. That's right. I'm going to be coming to Bulgaria and I'm going to eat on your and drink good wine on your nickel.
Let's do that next summer. If that's a commitment, I'll send you all the details and the flight ticket. So once again, everybody, if you haven't read this book, It's Not About the Coffee by Howard Bihar. Go get a copy. And Howard, thank you so much for being with us, for sharing your learnings. See you very soon in Bulgaria.
Okay, Stoyan. Thank you very much.
Thank you guys for listening. Make sure to subscribe to my monthly newsletter by visiting stoyanyankov.com and also learn about the Perform methodology and the Perform book, as well as our various personal and team coaching offers. Stay tuned and keep performing.